Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm your host, George Beverly Jr. I'm so excited today. I know I sounded like Cat Williams at that moment, but I'm so excited today because we will be talking about the glory days of my high school football years, and I have special guests, Tommy Johns and Mike Johns. Tommy Johns is my high school football coach's son, and I'll be talking to him today. And he was a little kid when I played. So he would come around and be around the football team, you know, he was just part of the team. I mean, of course, he was a younger kid back then, but I'm just excited just to talk about my football days because it inspires me to be a football coach now. I can't wait to get them on. So let me go through the intro and all that stuff so we can get to talking. So you can find me at george.mango.904 at Facebook. You can also find me on Sign Off Forums on Facebook. You can always go to my website, Sign Off Forums. That's with 3Fs and an S, .com.net.org. You can also Google me to find me. If you don't get a chance to listen to the live broadcast, you can always go back and listen to the archives if you go to my pages. You can also call in at 347-989-9110. And you know how we do it. We kick it with Ephesians 6:6-13. Not with eye service as man pleases, but the servant of Christ doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord, not to men, knowing that whatever so good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether be bond or free, and ye masters do the same thing unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is the respect of the persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take upon the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day, and having all done to stand. And let the church say, Amen. Whew. Man, let's get this started. Okay, let's see. It's coming through. Don't worry, y'all. It's coming. Tommy, are you there? Twilight Zone. Come on, button. Sorry, this button is deciding it's going to take its sweet time to download and open up. Gonna get it pretty soon. Well, Tommy, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. How you doing this morning?
Good, George, and yourself?
I'm awesome, man. I'm so awesome. So blessed. I really appreciate you coming on and taking your time to come on the show. You just don't know how excited I am.
Oh, I'm excited with you, I promise you.
what I'd like to do is just go ahead and give like a little background about who you are and about your dad, if you can.
Okay. Well, I'm Coach Mike Johns' son, which obviously he coached you also, George, in high school, and he's been coaching for 48 years now, and this is going to be his last season to coach. He's retiring, and I've kind of followed in his footsteps, so to speak. I've been a coach now for 9 years here at St. Louis Catholic with him, and it's been a pleasure and something I thoroughly enjoy, and hopefully I can continue to do it for a long time. I don't know about 48 years, but I'll try to go as long as I can.
is it something that was just you knew you that's what you wanted to do as far as following your father's footsteps, or was it just a decision you made in college?
Well, Jordan, to be honest, growing up around all y'all and being around LaGrange football my entire life and. To be quite honest, it's the only thing I really ever knew. I guess I really firmly decided it when I was in college or right when I got to college and decided to go through with it, but I really can't see myself doing anything else. And being around people like you and those guys at LaGrange and all the success that y'all were able to have, and for me to see that and witness it and to see what hard work really looks like and how it turns into wins on the field and how you guys are able to graduate from high school and to go on to different careers and to see how much of an impact a coach can have on a young person's life is one of the main reasons I decided to get into it, other than, you know, obviously being exposed to what I was when I was a young child. And like I said, I wouldn't change anything over the last 20 years or so. And it's been a blast. And I'll be honest, I wish I could go back to those days of LaGrange at any time. But those were some fun times.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I tell you what, man, your dad was like a father to me. Him and Coach Fraze and Coach Havard, those guys were like a father. I mean, my father wasn't in my life much, but they were like fathers to me. I mean, they taught me so much. Not only on the field, but off the field, and how to make sure that I keep my character intact. How do I carry myself? And I still live with that stuff today. You know, I've been coaching for 17 years.
Wow!
But you know, I've done high school. I one year of high school, 1 year junior high. But I'm trying to get into something high schoolish this year and start. I've been to Iraq, and so I'm a veteran. I got PTSD and all that stuff, so it's kind of really hard for me.
Right.
But I tell you what, before that, I mean, I just know that my love and my heart has always been football. I got out the Army to actually be a football coach.
Right.
So, yeah, and I'm just telling you, man, it's just something about what your dad and coach and his coaching staff instilled in not only me but the rest of the team. I mean, of course, you had your Yahoos who just couldn't grasp that concept. But for people like me, though, man, it's a lifelong skill. I mean, it was so impactful. Yeah, and I've never had a chance to actually, tell your father thank you, because I've been back to Lake Charles, but I haven't hooked up with him. So just let him know for me that I really appreciate how he molded me as a young man. Just the respect aspect of it, discipline, can you talk about what you saw back then, as far as how your dad would teach us and mentor us?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one thing that stuck in my mind all those years, even when I was young. I think those are some of the things that I learned more so than an X and O standpoint, how he was able to come, he was at LaGrange for a number of years and then left for five and then came back as a head coach. And, how it is, George, anytime you come into a new program, LaGrange wasn't new to him, but it was a different group of players. And you got to come over there and you got to win them over. You got to get them to buy into what you're selling. And that's, I think, the thing that I respect most about him and, the rest of the staff there is, it wasn't just about winning. It was about being a father figure for a lot of the players there and still in the discipline that it's going to take for them to be successful when they left high school. And I think nowadays a lot of coaches don't, I don't want to say a lot, but there's some that don't necessarily do that or forget about it. And I think that still has to be the number one priority as to why you coach, is to develop young men and to make them better when they leave here. And I think I learned that a lot around y'all when I was growing up around LaGrange and seeing him and the rest of the staff, for that matter, being a father figure to a lot of the players and still the discipline they need. And I think a lot of them to this day, like you said, George, they appreciate that. And to me as a coach, there's nothing more gratifying when a player returns, 10, 15, 20 years later, and thanks you for something other than just making him a better football player, And I think that's one thing that one of the many things that I've learned from him and all the other coaches at LaGrange and the players too. Those are memories that will always last, with me.
I don't want to jump the gun too much, but how did it feel for the family to the year that – well, I wouldn't say the year. It would be 95.
Right.
Year of 95, when your father took us to the semifinal. I don't want to jump the gun too soon, but I just you know, how did the atmosphere feel in your family that your dad was able to take us so deep in the playoffs?
I feel, to me, Joe, I don't know if you agree with this, but it feels like it was yesterday. I think I was in sixth or seventh grade when that happened, and when they went to the semifinals, and I remember everything, just about. And you know, I wasn't very old, but I was old enough to remember the majority of things that happened throughout that entire season. And it's a feeling you never forget, regardless if you win or lose that game. It's getting there, and the community support that we got from everybody, and the amount of people were in that stadium at McNeese that night. That's the type of stuff you never forget. And like I said, I've been done playing now for, I don't know, 13, 14 years now, and that's even out of my playing career and coaching career and all that. You know, I wasn't even a part of that team, but it feels like I was, and it's something that I'll never forget. And I'm talking about the players, to the coaches, to the community support, that entire season, it was just unreal. And like I said, I was just an innocent bystander, you know. I wasn't a coach or a player, but you know my dad was, and obviously, and I was able to see, you know, how happy he was and how exciting it was for him and the rest of the community, you know, and that's something I'll never forget.
Well, I wish I could share the same sentiments. No, I'm just joking. Listen, I tell you what. Like I said, I don't want to jump the gun because I know my listeners don't know exactly what we're talking about. But I'm going to go through, guys. Don't worry. I'm going to go through, and we're going to go through the season, and we're going to talk about some stuff of highlights that I remember. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe somebody else will call in and put their two cents in. But if I could paint a picture, the only thing that I can remember of that night was crying to Miss Hansen, Nancy Hansen. Now, the funny thing about it is you guys posted some stuff on Facebook, and I didn't even realize the score. I didn't even know what the score was. All these years, I didn't know what the score was. All I know is we lost.
Yeah.
So, and I was a junior that year. We went to the semifinals. So, you know, and of course I know what happened my senior year. But okay, so let's back up. Okay. So we know that Coach John had apparently when I was reading, apparently he went from Sam Houston back to LaGrange, and you were talking about him, about players buying into the system. Now, was it? I don't know if you know it or not, but did you know what type of offense and defense he was deciding to run when he was going back to LaGrange, or did he?
Yeah, I know when he went back, and we still actually run a similar version of it to this day is the 4-2-5 on defense, which has become very, very popular in college football.
It's the best defense on the planet.
Yeah. It's
did your dad make that up?
What's that?
Did your dad make that up?
No, actually. It was North, which is UL Monroe now. Their staff had kind of come up with it. They won the national championship that year, and I remember Dad went down there and they got the defense from them, and nobody really ran it much back then. Correct, Pop? He's sitting right here. Nobody really ran it back then, and he went and got the majority of it from them, and kind of made his own version of it, and installed it at LaGrange when he got there, and been a firm believer in it ever since. And we've had to adapt to it, made some changes to it since we got to St. Louis, just because of the fact that the game has changed a little bit with more of the, you know, the spread offenses and stuff like that. We've had to adapt. And but it's still one of the most popular defenses run in college football still to this day.
Right. So can you explain the adaptation? Because that's very interesting.
Sure. You know, originally when it came out and when they at LaGrange, it was what they called the 8-man front. There was 4 down linemen, 2 linebackers, and then they had two strong safeties, okay, which are basically most defenses nowadays they call outside linebackers. That's just a glorified name for it. But then they had 2 corners and a free safety. But in the whole scheme of things, there's 5 defensive backs. So It was good against, obviously, the run and the pass both, because you had a lot of speed on the field. And it gives you the ability to put your five fastest guys out there and that are available to you, but also big enough to help you stop, you know, in the running game. But nowadays, where it's really had to adapt, it's mainly back then it was an eight-man front, which, you know, you had a single high, free safety, and it was cover three. You know, a three-deep zone, you really didn't do a whole lot different in the secondary. But nowadays you have to – it's going to more of a cover four quarters look and cover two, two high look safety, which removes one of those strong safeties out of the box, so to speak. And it's basically had to adapt to all the spread stuff that guys are doing nowadays, all the one back sets, which we didn't see back then. You know, back in the 90s and even the early 2000s, majority of the offenses were a lot of two back stuff, I formations, wing tees type stuff. So it was really, really good against all that. And as the game has grown and offenses have changed, it's gone more to the one-back spread and spread option, stuff like that, passing game. And then also people are running a lot of empty, you know, five wide. And so you've got to be able to adapt to all that stuff they're giving you nowadays. And it's, as you can tell, you look at some of the scores around the country, it's defense is becoming less and less important, apparently. You know, and but these offenses have gotten a lot harder to stop. And
right.
Especially if you have the players to do it. And that's a big key to it. You know, some people try to do it, they really just don't have the personnel for it. And the schemes are good, they just don't really have the speed to do it. But, you know, the game is ever-changing, that's for sure.
And I 100% agree. I can't even think. I've ran a lot of defenses.
Right.
And I always come back to the 4-2-5. I mean, it's
right.
Like you said, it is the best defense for any system. And, you know, I was under the impression the reason why we ran it, the reason why we ran the 4-2-5 mostly was to stop the option. Now, when I played, we played against Kevin Falk and Dwight Collins.
Right.
For Barb.
Sure.
And what's his name? Slater.
Slade Nagel was quarterback.
Slade Nagel. Right.
Yep.
They ran a lot of one-back sets. They ran a lot of spread one-back sets back then. And Kevin
right.
Falk used to, you know, they used to run a lot of five-man receiver, and then he would run like a quarterback draw, you know.
Right. They used to put him at quarterback and let him run around. Yeah, I remember those.
And just let him run, just run around. And so, you know, it's funny because I see Kevin Falk now play, well, when he did play for the New England Patriots, and I'm like, geez, I could be playing in the pros right now.
Yeah. It's amazing watching those guys, and, boy, he's had a heck of a career, and he just retired, and he's actually the head football coach at Carencro now.
Stop it. He is not.
Yep.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh,
he just his first year. So.
Okay, so what about what's his name? Brandon Stokely. He was also a receiver for Como.
Como
when
right.
we played him. Yeah. Yeah. So, do you see the 4-2-5 making its way back in as a primary defense rather than the 4-3? I mean, because I know the 3-4 is kind of like the 4-2-5, but you have more linebackers. So are you saying that?
Right.
Nowadays in high school, there's more safeties than there are linebackers, or vice versa.
Right. Well, I think now, you know, we're based out of the 4-2-5, but we've got to be very multiple. I guess is the best way to describe it. We every now and then we run a version of a 3-4. If we're getting a bunch of spread like five wide empty sets, then we'll go to a three down. We'll pull a lineman out. We'll put in actually. Personnel-wise, we run six. We'll put in six defensive backs. We'll put in six DBs, two linebackers, and then three down linemen. And that's what a lot of the guys, you know, they're calling it the 3-4. Personnel-wise, there's actually six defensive backs out there in passing situations, you know, and it's just become more of the 3-4 is becoming very, very popular because it's kind of a hybrid, so to speak, between the 4-2-5 and the 4-3 and. You know, at the end of the day, George, to me, they're all very, very relevant. You know, you can only run X amount of coverages. You can run cover two. You can run cover four. You can run some man free or some man coverages. At the end of the day, you got to decide how many you want in the box and how many you don't. You know, and
right, and
it all comes down to personnel and what you're trying to stop. And I think
right, that's
offense is getting so multiple, and now defenses are doing the same thing. So nobody nowadays, even in high school, you're starting to see guys who are based out of the 4-2-5, but you look up, depending on personnel, they might be in a 3-down look. You know, they could be in a 3-4. It just depends on, I guess, what you're facing that particular week, which is a lot different than what, you know, what it used to be. Because most of the time, for the majority, you know, in the 80s and in the early to mid-90s, you saw a lot of I teams, wing T, stuff like that, and the occasional one back, but not like you do now, you know.
Right, for sure, for sure. Yeah. Do you let's talk about offense.
Okay.
So what offense? What offense? I mean, because I know when we played a lot of I, power I, which I fell in love with. Your dad implemented the power I. That's with Tony Williams and
Tony Williams, right?
Tony Williams. What's his name? Frankie London.
Frankie London, right? Back then, yeah, we were more of an option team back in the early to mid-90s. And actually, even when I played, we were based out of the eye. We ran a lot of veer option, stuff like that, which is basically what they ran with Frankie and them.
A lot of veer
out of the eye. I think when Dad first got there, they ran the wing tee. Pop, is that right? Yeah, they ran the wing tee originally when he first got there, and then they moved a little bit more to the eye, two-back stuff, and were real successful. They had Derek Franklin back then at quarterback, and he was a real good option quarterback, and then Frankie was right after him.
Right.
So you had two great option quarterbacks back-to-back, you know, and that didn't happen very often, you know.
Oh, no. And I tell you
especially in high school.
When I was a freshman and I saw Derek Franklin and that senior team run the option the way it was, like it was supposed to be ran, I just
right, fell
in love with the offense. Like it was,
sure.
I wish I was fast enough and big enough to play. I just remember, I don't know who we were playing, but we're at the goal line and we ran, I think we just ran a regular veer option to the right. It was like pro right I set or something like that.
Right.
And Frankie London got the ball, not Frankie London, Tony Williams got the ball, faked the ball, jumped over the pile like he had the ball in the end, in the end zone, and then Derek London comes around, and Simeon Archie comes around in the option, and then we score.
Right.
I don't remember who we're playing, but to me that was, as a freshman, you know what, I think we're playing Barb, because we're on the opposite side of the field. Yeah,
right.
And when we did, because we were on the opposite side of the field, but we were playing at home, so it was Barb. And I just remember that. I tell you what, I fell in love with the offense. And,
oh, that's a great offense. There's no question.
Yeah, and, you know, I've played defense my whole entire career for your dad, and because of his coaching and his coaching staff taught me so much that I fell in love with the offense, even though I played defense. It was like Coach Frase told me, he said, I don't know if your dad remember this or not, but it was my junior year, and I was cocky because I was going to be a starter. And I walk around with a chip on him. He's like, George, if you don't get your button, well, of course, you know Coach Frase.
Yeah.
He's like, if you didn't get your button gear, you're gonna sit on the pitch. You're gonna go to second team. And so apparently I wasn't giving him what I thought I was supposed to give him, and he sat me down. One time your dad, it had to be the beginning of the season, like my sophomore year. I couldn't get the concept because I was on the weak side that all I had to do was get the pitch. That's it. That's all my job was, to get the pitch. And
you
I kept going to the
same
quarterback.
Yep.
Yeah. And I said, but Coach Johns, the quarterback's coming at me. He said, I don't care. You get the pitch.
That's right.
And then he said, if you do your job, everything else would fall in place. And let me tell you, Tommy, when he told me that, I did not get it then, but it clicked in the middle of the season when he switched me over to the strong side. He decided
right.
to switch me over to the strong side, and then I was behind JP.
Right.
And then I started
yeah.
playing. I started playing JP. JP became fullback. But and because he told me that, I still carry that with my kids today. If you do your job, everything
exactly.
else will fall in place. And I never
exactly.
forgot that. So if you tell him, can you tell him thank you for that? Because I tell you what, that was the best concept I could ever learn.
Right.
Because when you're doing your X's and O's and stuff like that, especially mentally on your head if you're playing on the field, all I had to do was do my job, and I like, okay, well, I've got to and then Coach Vic told me, he said, look, all you got to do is cause a pile in the backfield and hold on as long as you can.
Yeah.
Because you remember,
that's
I was
right.
like 125 pounds. I was, you know, I wasn't a big player. But
that's a good old days. That's a concept we still try to teach to this day. It's doing your job. And don't worry about anybody else, because typically we always tell them, when you start worrying about somebody else's job, you tend to forget to do yours. And
for sure.
But that's how we're able to tell, you know, if they're doing something to us schematically or whatever, well, are you doing your job or are you worrying about somebody else's job? And if you're doing what you're supposed to do, then if you get 11 guys to buy into that and do what they're supposed to do, everything will fall into place. But like I said, all it takes is for one guy to not do his job, and it can cost you, you know.
Oh, yeah, it can cost you, sure. Yeah.
That's football, but that's also in life, you know, when working at your job or whatever else, you know.
Oh, you've
got to do
yeah.
your job to keep it, you know. So that I think.
For sure, and, you know, that carried over into the military for me.
I can about imagine.
Yeah, when my drill sergeants were yelling in my face, it didn't faze me not one bit because I had Coach Fraze. I mean, he chewed me out so much. It was like, the drill sergeants did not scare me one bit, Tom. I'm telling you, they didn't scare me with anybody. They didn't even hear. Now, if you would have put Coach Fraze, because he was our for you guys who don't know, Coach Fraze was my secondary coach, and I tell you, he was a roughneck. He was the man. He was definitely a great secondary coach. He did other things than that. But he got into my butt so bad, man, the drill sergeants couldn't even touch him. Not even close.
Coach Fraze just retired, actually. He had moved to Houston, and he had been in Houston probably about the last 15 years or so. And he just retired. I ran into him this summer. So Coach Fraze, I'm sure he'd love to hear this, George.
Man, I'm telling you what, I mean, these men in my life, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really understand it, you know.
No.
You're just thinking that the coaches are picking on you. But see,
sure.
For me, I had a tough skin, and my mom was wonderful.
Right.
And she was always, you know, talking about the coaches. She didn't know them, but she knew they were good men because my brothers had played for them.
Right.
And so she's like, I don't care what going on, you're going to listen to those men because they're going to take care of you. And you
right.
know, my mom keeping me in line, your dad and the staff. And I believe that's the reason why we're so successful. I think what you said was very true. When the kids buy into the system, it's so
right.
much easier.
Exactly.
Because when I've coached and the kids didn't buy into the system, man, it was a long year.
It is. It's an extremely long. Yeah, I agree 100%. And, you know, you've got to get them to buy in, and if they don't, you're in trouble, you know. And, you know, but I think a lot of that, George, too, nowadays it starts at home. You know, it's you know, the parents have got to be able to instill in them, you know, the discipline and the self. They got to have self-motivation, period. They got to come out there with the right attitude and listen to authority, listen to the coaches. They got to trust that they're going to put them in the right position. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, these days it doesn't always happen like that. you know. And
oh, no.
I think it's just it's a different day and time, and it changes every day, you know. But at the end of the day, like we all, you know, it starts at home, and if the parents buy in, and they get the kids to do what they're supposed to do, it makes your life as a coach obviously a lot easier. Now, not everybody comes from families to where they have that. And it's when, as a coach, that's when you got to take it upon yourself to be that father figure, to instill in them what they need to be successful when they leave. You know, and because not everybody has that type of home life to where the parents are going to step in and do it, you know. And you can, I think nowadays that you've coached, and you may agree or disagree, but I think you can pretty much figure out which kids do and which kids don't, you know, have that ability at home. And I think that's a big deal regarding whether they're buying in or not, and have that discipline and the guidance to know right from wrong, you know.
And I also would like to add to that the kids' capacity of working for what they need, for what they want, and getting handing it to them.
Exactly.
There's a lot of kids who think because they're what I call legendary kids, because they're
sure.
brothers or their uncles or stuff, and they go to the schools, and so they think automatically they have a starting spot.
Right.
And
right.
And these kids, when they play for me, I'm like, no, I don't know
right.
who they are. Well, I probably do. But it's like, no, you're going to work for the spot. If you think you deserve
for
it, you better go and get it. You know,
right.
I'm not going to just put you in the spot off based off of who your father was, because you're not your father.
Exactly.
I mean, your father's a great person, but he's a great player. But who are you? You may not have the same abilities.
Exactly.
And,
it's
I tell you what,
entitlement, I guess.
Yeah, sense of, that's the word I was looking for, entitlement.
Right.
Another thing that I really appreciated, it seemed like I'm just, you know, puffing up your dad's head, but and I got to give respect where respect is due. So another thing that he taught me was, it just slipped my head, that it's not all about pure athleticism. If you know,
sure.
if you know the scheme of things, if you know scheme, and this is what he taught me, and I've told this to a lot of kids, I wasn't the fastest person. I wasn't the quickest person. I had a little quickness. I wasn't the biggest person, but your father and his staff had faith in me, in my abilities to do whatever it was. I don't know what it was. I thank God for that now. But whatever that ability that they saw in me, I'm glad
right.
they utilized it, because I did understand scheme.
Right.
And so because I understood offensive scheme, it was easier for me to play. It was easier for me to play rather than and that helped with, you know, film study and knowing personnel and all that stuff too as well.
Right.
And tendencies and stuff. But it helped me as a player play and not worry about, well, am I fast enough? Will I be able to cover this guy? If I did everything that they taught me, if I saw run, then I attacked the run. If I saw pass, I do my pre-steps, and then I drop back at a 45-degree angle, and I'm already in the throwing lane. So
right.
I don't necessarily have to worry about my speed. Maybe a little height maybe would have helped, you know what I mean?
Sure.
What's that?
I think that's what anybody, you know, if every kid you look at, well, if he only had this. Boy, if he had another 2 inches, or if he weighed 10 more pounds, you know. But, you know, especially at this level, high school, you can't pick your kids. You got to go what's
no.
given to you, and you got to make the most of what you have. And to me, you know, like I say, college and in the professionals, you get to pick. You know, so you can go out there and get whoever you want to do what you need them to do. But in high school, I think this is the most purest form of the game, because you have to get out there and you have to develop these kids when they get there. They don't show up on your doorstep knowing how to play football. It just
no.
doesn't happen like that, you know, not at this age. But you're right. You know, it's knowing what you're doing, buying into what their coaches are telling you, and if you do what you're supposed to do, everything should take care of itself. There is no question
right.
about that. I agree 100% on what you're saying.
Yeah. So how is it? How is it? Maybe I don't know if your dad can answer or not, but or maybe you can answer it. How is it? Because I thought about this too, and you were talking. You're right about developing, because that's what it's about is developing. How do you?
Right.
How do you go about developing a soldier? I mean, because there's a lot of people who are listening right now are going to listen. They're wanting to be a football coach, or they wanted to be a baseball coach, or whatever. They just want to be a coach, period. How do they develop a player? I think that's important for coaches to hear.
Oh, sure. And I think number one is you've got to be patient. You know, I think every coach gets caught up, and they kind of get frustrated when they don't do what exactly you tell them to do. And I'm going to tell you right now, when they get here, they're not. Depending on where you are, there are some schools, they have a true feeder program in the middle schools. When they do get to you, they have an idea of what's going on. But not everybody has a situation. So when they get to you, even in high school nowadays, you know, you're having to teach them still how to get in the right stance. Okay? And you got to start from the bottom. You know, what is the A gap? What is a B gap? How do you play a ball in phase, out of phase? You know, things like that. It's the little things that you have to take the time to develop them. And when I say develop, you got to start from scratch. And we start from day one, we start with stance and alignment, you know. And, okay, this is how you get in the proper stance. And we don't move on to the next thing until they've perfected that. Or I say perfected, until they've got it to where they understand they can break the huddle and can get in that stance. And then once we feel like they've progressed in that, then we go on to the next thing, which from a defensive standpoint, we'll teach them how to line up in the scheme. And then we're going to teach them how to tackle the correct way, which to me has become a lost art, by the way, the correct way to tackle, and especially from a defensive standpoint, obviously. And we work extremely hard, especially the first 2 to 3 weeks of the summertime, other than the weight training, is when we start teaching these guys that, you know, when they come in as freshmen, you know, how to get in the stance, you know, what are your keys, what are your reads, things like that. But I think we take for granted nowadays, you just assume they're going to show up knowing what the majority of their stuff is, and they really don't. And it just depends on where they come from, I guess is my point. They come from middle school where they teach your system, or are they just showing up on your doorstep? And it happens either way. And you've got to develop them regardless if they're very good, or if they're one of your star players. You got to develop them the same. Just the speed at which you do so changes depending on their ability.
I totally agree with that, because coming out of middle school, I didn't play a lick of football.
Right, yeah. And we still get a bunch of those like that.
And so I get there, and, you know, I tell you what, tackling is a lost art. It is just one of those things where I say now that football is under attack.
It is.
They're changing so many rules. I don't really know exactly how it is in high school for the rules now, but I'll be looking into that pretty soon.
Yeah, it's going to trickle down.
I want to transition into the season. Especially my junior year. It would be my junior year. When we played different teams, were you able to travel to the game, all the games?
Yeah, I went to the majority of them when we traveled. It just depended on, you know, obviously how far it was, but I think I was at just about every game.
Did you go to the Neville game?
Yep, sure did. I remember it like it was yesterday, too.
If it wasn't for football, I would have never left Lake Charles, I'll tell you that. So for me, traveling way up north was a very enlightening experience. And then we end up going to Northeastern University to I think warm up or practice, or we did something, I can't remember. But we end up being on the same field with their football team, and there was a safety there. I don't remember his name, but I remember his face. And he was just talking to me. And so we transitioned into the stadium, and this is not quarterfinals. So we played them, and it was regionals.
Right, regionals.
Yeah, it was regionals.
Yep.
And it was a moment that I would never forget. All I knew was that Coach John was telling us that, you know, we were so many points underdog and we just need to go out there and play our game.
Right.
Then I found out what offense they were running. And, Tommy, and when I found out what offense they were running, I pretty much laughed inside. because, no, I'm serious. They were running the wishbone double tight. And sometimes
right.
it would split out a Z or X. But when they did that, I laughed inside. Because at that point, I had 3 years under my belt to understand scheme.
Right.
And I got to the point where they can't really do anything.
Right.
They can run a dive. They can run, you know, an option. They can run counter option. They can run veer. They can run. But they can't pass.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, I mean, especially back then, they're one dimensional.
Right, and so because I was taught so brilliantly by the coaching staff. To me, it was like a done deal for me. Now,
right.
I moved to the quarterfinals when we played Acadiana. Well, Acadiana. Yes, the second time. Now, I don't know if your dad remembered this or not, but I gave him such a fit the first time around against Acadiana. I could not stop. I would get there. Look, Tommy, I would get there so early that Corey Robinson would hit me and I would fly out of the way, right? And so when he would hit me, I wouldn't cause a pile. And so what they did was is they took me out, switched Mike Reed as outside, put Mike Reed in my spot, and then put Michael Richard at outside linebacker. And we've done that a few times during the course of the season. And I tell you what, man, I gave your dad so much. Oh, my goodness. Your dad was, oh, I can remember just so livid. She's like, George, what is going on? I'm like, Coach, I'm doing what I need to do. I just can't make the tackle. So, I mean, hey, listen, I'm telling you, I remember this, like you said, like it was yesterday.
Yesterday, oh,
and
yeah.
And I can still remember the hit that he would hit me. He would just, you know, I mean, they were in split backs. I mean, they were just running.
Right.
They were just running sweep right to the wide side of the field, sweep left to the wide side of the field. That's the only
and
thing
they still
had,
do the same
right?
thing to this day, by the way.
Stop it.
I'm telling you, and they've been to the Superdome. Oh, probably 4 or 5 times. They've won a couple of state titles doing it in the last 7 or 8 years. They still run it to this day. Sure do.
Man, that's crazy. They should be able to crush them anyway. I'm going to get off that. But so we get back to the semifinals, and we get to the quarterfinals, and, oh, God, I can't believe I forgot his name. Oh, man. But anyway, one of the coaches, the new coaching staff. Oh, God, I can't believe it. I forgot his name. But anyway, so he's like, well, George, it's time for redemption. Either you're going to do it or we're going to lose. So I said, okay, Coach. So the only thing we ran in practice was sweep left, sweep right, sweep left, sweep right. And not only did they mess with me about sweep right, sweep left, they put Calvin Mills in the backfield. So every time they would run, they would put Calvin Mills as a fullback. And I'm telling you what, oh man, I had the biggest headache.
I cannot imagine.
But needless to say, we're walking on the field, and I saw Kevin Falk, and he's like, man, I need y'all to beat these guys. Y'all need to beat them. Of course, you know, everybody was cheering for us because nobody liked Acadiana anyway. Anyway,
sure.
So I saw Kevin Falk. He said, hey, you guys need to beat them. And, of course, the first play they ran was sweep right, and it was crushed.
You crushed it.
Now, I don't know if – I don't know if you tell this to your students, your coach, your kids or not, but Coach John used to tell, well, not Coach John, Coach Havert used to tell me, he said, the first hit will orchestrate the rest of the game. If the player
absolutely
comes out and hits you hard, you're going to be really scared for the rest of the game. If he comes off soft,
tell our kids, set the tone early.
Yes. So when he came out and was sweep right, Corey Robinson came out and hit me, and he hit me like a pillow, I was like, this is going to be an easy game.
It's a lot easier going against him than Calvin Mills, I would assume.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm like, he didn't hit me as hard as he usually did. I mean, because I can remember the first game when he was hitting me. I mean, he was just blowing me out. But, of course, at that point I had technique and I had a week to prepare for this, especially going against Calvin Mills and turning the run inside or making the tackle myself. But
right.
So that was my quarterfinal story. Now, my semifinal story, I don't remember at all. I don't remember even practicing. All I remember was coming off the field. That's the only thing I remember, coming off the field.
Right.
I know Frankie hurt his ankle during the Acadiana game, so he was limping a lot. So
I
that put a hamper on offense. But they ran a spread, and I don't know if your dad was afraid of me being out there or not, because I couldn't cover well. But I could stop the run. I was a run stopper, but coverage, not so well.
But so
I really don't know. I don't really even think they threw. I don't know. Do you guys have old tapes or audio
yep.
tapes?
Yeah, we have. We've got a couple of games from that season. As a matter of fact, we still have the semifinal. I think he's probably got five or six games from that year. We keep up here actually at St. Louis. As a matter of fact.
No, really. Could I get copies of those? I could pay
sure.
for the shipping and all that stuff. Because I would really love to review. I really like to watch the film and break it down and review it because.
Right.
I don't remember anything. And
it actually has audio with it. The radio is coincide with the game. Actually, the one on the copy we have, so it's got a little commentary to it. Also,
awesome.
So it's a pretty cool deal. We definitely
awesome.
Can make a copy of that. That's not a problem.
Thank you. Because I don't remember anything, man. I mean, all I remember is everybody kept talking about, they've already bought their tickets, their tickets they've already bought their hotel to the
Superdome.
To New Orleans,
yeah.
to the Superdome and all that stuff. And when we lost, it was kind of like, I don't know, it's like the whole earth just fell down or something.
It did. I agree. That's kind of what it felt like, and like I said, I wasn't even a player, but that's kind of what it felt like. I agree with that 100%. That was a tough one to swallow, I think, for everybody involved, But obviously, too, Frankie London was hurt and we couldn't run any option game that night, and that changes. When you got to change your offense literally in a week, that's not very good, and we were still in the game, only lost by a point in overtime.
Yeah.
My dad and I still talk to this day about it. If Frankie's healthy, it probably wouldn't even been a ball game. We probably run away with that game. There's no question. But it's one of those things. We tell our kids all the time. You're gonna suffer injuries in this game. You just gotta be able to step up. Next guy's gotta step up and do what he can to help.
For sure. That's definitely the thing. The next guy has to step up. And, I don't know if you do this or not, but I kind of call it, senior mentorship. Like, I want my kids to know that if you're a quarterback, and you've got young kids underneath you, they're not going to get that
right.
many snaps. So,
sure.
when you get a chance, kind of like mentor them and say, hey, look, this is what you could possibly do or this is what you can, because I can think of this one specific person. He had a cannon. I'm not going to say his name because it wouldn't be right for me to say his name. He had a rocket cannon arm, but he could not take a snap. And I'm thinking, that's the easiest thing to do, but apparently it's not.
I'd agree.
And, you know, he was around my age, so, you know, we're thinking that, you know, it's going to be a continuation of, you know, the following year, and my senior year was such a disappointment.
Right.
It was, I mean, we had everybody coming back.
Right.
On defense, most of the defense came back anyway, I should say. I mean, yeah,
right.
We lost Roy Vital.
Right.
We lost Roy Vital, but, I mean.
And offensively, you probably lost the house. I think we lost almost everybody on offense that year.
We lost definitely our quarterback was a situation was, man, I tell you
right.
What, it was. Thank God for Russell Bonds.
Russell Bonds, yeah. Yeah. I remember old Russell.
You know what? He called me my radio show one night.
Oh, did he?
And, yeah, and I was hoping that, you know, he works crazy hours. I was hoping he could come on and call and talk, but I don't think he's going to be able to because his course is, you know, 10-something
right.
or 11-something yard guys this time. But anyway, so he calls in, and I wanted to thank him because I hadn't talked to him in a long while. Then we had Mike Hathaway, and we had Cedric Roberts, and it was just, I don't know, man. I feel bad because it started the decline, I guess you could say, in the LaGrange history. And
yeah,
that was
well,
the year.
In 96 and then, 94 was obviously a real good year. 95 wasn't so much. But after that, it picked right back up. I know in 96 they went back to the quarters, got beat by West Monroe, and then and in 99 went back to the quarters again and got beat by West Monroe again. So and then soon thereafter it wasn't very good for the Gators. I guess I should say. But they seem to have sort of picked it up the last couple of years a little bit, but it's just never been what it was all throughout the 1990s. It just hasn't really been close, and you know, in my opinion.
Right.
And we played them a couple of times, actually.
What was the motivating factor to go for your dad and you to go to St. Louis?
Well,
I know you went there.
Right. He left the year that he retired after I graduated, and that had already given him at that time 35 years he had in. So he was, you know, he was eligible for retirement, and was either going to pursue a coordinator's position possibly in Texas, or, you know, if something came open around Lake Charles, you know, he'd look into it. And it wasn't very long after he decided to retire that St. Louis called and was interested. And talking to him, and so he came over and talked to him, and probably took 2 or 3 weeks. They talked and went back and forth with a few things, and he decided to do it, and we've been able to build a pretty good program over here, very proud of, and just when we got here, it wasn't probably the best situation that you could walk into, and they were coming off a couple of losing seasons and needed a lot of work, and he was able to bring in some guys. They coached at Barb at the time, and over the last 13 years, with the exception of the first 2 years, we've had a winning season ever since, which dates back to 2000 or 2001, and I've been in the playoffs every year ever since, been in the quarterfinals a couple of times. So we've had some real good football teams over the last 10 to 12 years over here. It's been fun.
Are the kids still buying into the system? Are they trying to be an individual and try to, you know, say I want a scholarship and stuff like that? Are they individuals or are they teaming?
Well, you know, that's the thing about we have a lot of, you know, we have good high school players over here, George. We haven't had very many that have signed college scholarships. You know, when we take the field, we're not going to be the most talented, so to speak, regarding, you know, scholarship offers, I guess, is my point. But we got some solid high school players, if you get my drift. You know, we've had a few that have signed out of here since we've been here to McNeese. I think our biggest one was the TCU, probably about 5 years ago, receiver we had. We've had a few go to McNeese. We've had a bunch of kickers that have gone – to some major schools. Our punter actually now kicks for – he's a punter for USC, Chris Alvarado. He's actually – he punted for us for 4 years out here. So he's currently the punter at USC. So we've had a bunch of kickers that have come out of here, and we probably had five or six, you know, Division One players over the last 10 to 12 years. But like I said, you know, our kids buy into what we're doing. And I think that's obviously been the main reason we've been successful in building a program.
How many years do you think that it takes to build a successful program? Do you think it's just the luck of the draw, or do you think that...
I think it depends on the type of situation you're walking into. To me, if you're walking a situation where you need to be completely rebuilt, I think you need to allow 3 to 4, you know, especially at this level, because you can't just, like in college, well, I can go out and get, you know, 25 players, and we can get this thing turned around in 2 or 3 years. Whereas in high school, you've got to start basically, if you're going to build a program, you better start going after your young guys, your eighth graders and incoming freshmen, and start getting them developed and getting them ready. Because that's going to be your future. And in the meantime, you got to get the current guys that are there. And like I said, like we talked about, you know, the whole past hour is getting to buy in to what you're selling. And I think that was one of the easiest things, or I say the easiest, one of the best things that he had in his advantage when he first got here was all the success he came from with LaGrange, you know. And he said, you know, this is the success we had over there. You know, if you guys buy in, you know, we'll be successful here. And they did.
What does it take to be a playoff team? Can you tell if your team is going to be a playoff team or not?
I think you can tell if they have the work ethic and the ability to get there. I think you can definitely tell that. But what you can't tell sometimes is obviously what's going to happen over the course of a season. You know, there's so many things that go on in a 10-week season or a 10- to 12-week time span that you really can't account for. And one of those things is luck, dealing with injuries and things like that. And there's years, you kind of, you know, if this team doesn't pick it up and doesn't improve in certain areas, you know, we might not get there. You know, and you have some that end up picking it up and they do whatever it takes to put themselves in that situation. You just at this age, you just never know what you're going to get. At the high school level.
How much of off-season work for coaching one and for players two? How much off-season work does it take to build a good team? Does your philosophy start in the spring, or does your philosophy start when the season starts?
Oh no, our off-season we start in December. You know, whenever the season's over with, we give them a week or two off to kind of recharge the batteries, and then we get cranked up with off-season. We go all the way through the spring, into the summer. And then the start of two-a-days, we're constantly doing something, whether it's lifting, running, or even doing football. I think, to me, George, that's where the game has changed the most, especially at this level, is the off-season, the working out, and then people are getting started earlier and earlier and earlier. We're used to, you know, you worked out throughout the winter and the spring, but more people start to do football. You know, we have athletic PE nowadays, you know, too, so we can go out there and practice at any time of the year during PE if we really want to, you know, doesn't matter when it is. But now after school you can't, but, you know, during your PE hour you can do whatever you need to do. So if you're in the middle of February or March and you want to give them a week off from lifting, you can go outside and do some football work, whether it's Pascal or drill work or whatever you want to do. To me, that's where the main thing to me, especially at the high school level, it's all changed compared to what it used to be.
I know this is probably, I don't know, this is part of the area of a head coach and coaching assistants. What about the mental toughness? Can you talk about the mental toughness on the field and off the field?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about that here recently a lot with the mental toughness and the mental aspect of it is, you can put them in situations, especially in the off season, to test their mental toughness and the duty to find out, you know, where these players are regarding the mental toughness. And I think a lot of that has to do, even, you know, coming from the home, and more important, what kind of self discipline do they have? And I think that all kind of goes hand in hand. And nowadays I don't compare it to even 10, 20 years ago. I don't know if they're quite as mentally tough as they used to be. I'm not saying that I'm positive on that, but it just seems that way. But also times have changed also, you know, from a discipline standpoint and all that. So, and society as a whole has changed. So I do think that sometimes does become an issue, but I think a lot of that has to do basically, you know, where you come from and, you know, things like that. So I think just everybody's different, and you got to handle that case by case.
How do you guys treat injuries? Are injuries are you hurt or injured kind of philosophy still, or is it more necessary, especially with concussions and things like that?
Nowadays you have a full-time trainer here, so you know when they go down, they're in the hands of the athletic trainer, and it's up to they make the call along with the head coach as decide, you know, what's the treatment options, how long they're going to be out, if they're going to be out at all, you know, things like that. And it's kind of taken out of the coach's hands, which for liability purposes and also for the treatment of the kid, it's probably in the best interest to do that.
I know I'm kind of putting you on, but I have a scenario for you. It's actually a real scenario that happened to one of the kids out here. So he tore his meniscus his freshman year.
Okay.
He did rehab. He came and he sat out at the beginning of the freshman year. Then he tore his ACL his sophomore year. If a player has done rehab on both things and recovering is okay and released by the doctor, would you on the same knee? I'm the same knee, by so you understand. Would you allow that player to play still, or would you recommend that the player just live the rest of his life, or he can?
I'd leave it in the hands of the player and also the parents. You know what they want to do. Number one, they have a future in the game at a higher level, in college or what have you. Number one, and you know how bad off is he? Does he have pain all the time, or is he pain free, or is he having issues when he works out afterwards? Is it still giving him problems? I think there's a lot of things you need to look into, and more importantly, from the kid's standpoint, do you really still want to play? Are you doing it just because you feel like you have to? I think that's a big thing. You got to get the kid's opinion involved, obviously, and also I think the parents, because they have a lot of say so at this age, and I kind of leave that in their hands, so to speak. You know, we'll give our recommendations, but I think that's something you kind of got to treat, once again, you know, case by case, depending on the type of kid you're dealing with and stuff like that and the severity of the injury.
Now, I never witnessed this with any of the coaching staff when I played, but what is the relationship between parents and coaches? I know it can be hairy at some times.
Yeah. It can be. I think they have to know their limitations.
Is that a full-time job?
What's that?
Is that a full-time job working with the parents?
It can be. I mean, it just depends on how much you allow them into your program, so to speak. You know, how involved are they, things like that. They've got to know their limits. You know, they have to understand that we're here to do our job, and, if there's in a case something happens and a situation arises, we'll meet depending on if we feel that's necessary. And, you know, and if we deem it not necessary, we won't meet with them at all. It just depends on what the situation is.
Right. I know when I coach that because I live in a small community, so the parents are always constantly at practice and they're always putting their two cents in about different things.
Oh, sure.
And how much do you let that affect the team? If for example, if you're having a bad season right. and you're a new coach. How do you tell other coaches or suggest other coaches handle those situations with the negativity or the parents constantly giving you emails or calling you, telling you what you should do?
You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's easy. Because at the end of the day, I don't care who you are, you're still a human. And for me to sit here and tell you you can't let it bother you, I'd be lying. Now, is that going to make or break my day? No. Because at the end of the day, you're trying to provide a service to these kids. And but not the parents don't always see it that way. But, we've got to be the professionals about it. We're going to handle it in a professional manner. And, if we do get emails or whatever, we let it go by the side, and we tell the staff the same thing. You know, if you get yourself caught up in a situation like that, you just need to, you turn around, you walk away, and be the professional about it, and we'll deal with what we have to deal with, internally here, within the program. But, if you get into coaching and you let things like that bother you and make or break your day, it'll run you out of this profession. Because, especially nowadays, all the criticism you hear on TV and stuff like that about coaches and stuff, very rarely is it even positive anymore. And it's a shame, but it's just the way it is. And, if you don't have tough skin, you're not going to make it very long in the coaching profession.
A couple more questions, and I'll end it. But how well should you know your opponent? I mean, from a player's point of view and also a coach's point of view.
I think it's extremely important. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, up here in Oregon, they don't like sharing football tape. So.
Okay. Yeah, that makes it a little bit more difficult. we spent quite a number of. Y'all on the honor system?
Yeah, we
still trade everything. Actually, nowadays we don't even trade DVDs or actual VHS anymore. We do it over online through a software program. It's called Huddle, and we break everything down. We used to break everything down by hand. Now we do it on the computer. The kids have access to it at home also, so they all have an account. I share the film with them. I make cut-ups for them of all the different plays. So we can write notes on it. We can do voiceover. I tell them, hey, watch number 10 right here, what have you. You see his alignment. It's little things like that you can do on it, and they can watch it at any time. They have access to all the films at home also. And then we can track how much time they're watching film, all those different things. And it's become a lifesaver. We don't have to go anywhere to trade. We trade online, so it's just become a very, very easy for us.
That's interesting to hear. I've never heard of it. Is that a recent development?
Over the last couple of years. We had a software program before that we used. We just weren't able to trade on it. But we've been breaking down on computer probably the last 6 or 7 years using the computer. It just makes life a lot easier. Organize it for you. It gives you tendencies and all that stuff instantly. So whereas, back in the day you had to do everything by hand. And whereas now, you've got everything at your fingertips.
And that's Huddle, just spelled like H-U-D-D-E-L-E?
It's H-U-D-L.
Oh, H-U-D-L. Okay.
Yeah, H-U-D-L.
So I'm trying to look it up. And
it's actually you can look at huddle.com. But, hey, look, George, look, man, I'm enjoying my time. We're about to head out to practice as we speak. We got a little mid-morning practice we're about to head out to. And my dad also wanted to tell you hello. He's doing well, and he's hanging in there, and wishes you the best.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your dad's time. It was definitely a treat and enjoyable. Hopefully we can do it again in the future.
Absolutely.
All right,
problem.
Sir. You take care.
Enjoyed it.
You take care.
Thanks,
and
George.
God bless.
Same
All
to
right.
you. All right,
Bye-bye.
Buddy. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Tommy Johns and Mike Johns. Like I said before, that was my football coach's son, and he grew up in the system. I mean, as he said, he was in sixth grade when I was a junior in 11th grade. So, you know, he definitely spent a lot of time around the locker room, and now he's currently an assistant coach with his father, which is totally great. I'll go over and I will read some of the accomplishments of Mike Johns, my former football coach. He's been coaching for 48 years. He has a bachelor degree from Magnesia State University in 1955. He graduated with a master's degree in administrative and supervision in 1956. He also has 30-plus degrees in education. He has a record at LeGrand's 89-49 and also a District 6 championship. He also has coached at St. Louis Catholic, and this is all in Lake Charles, Louisiana. He has a 72-65 record, 4 district champions. Overall, he's 160 wins and 114 losses, the most in both of the school's history. He's been, and LeBron, he has been to 10 playoffs in 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 97, 98, and 99 at St. Louis. He also has 10 playoff appearances in 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 2013. A total number of 20 total playoff appearances. His coach's honors are as follows. He has a district coach of the year of 1989, 1990, 1992, 1994, 1996, 1999, 2004, 2009, 2010, 2011. And he also was Louisiana Class 5A champ coach of the year in 1994. He also was the Southwest Louisiana Coach of the Year in 1994. He also was the Southwest Louisiana Big School Coach of the Year in 2010. He also was the Southwest Louisiana Coach of the Decade in 1990. So as you can see, his bio by himself speaks volumes of what type of coach he is. He's been let me see here. He coached from 1996 to 1997. He coached at LeGrand's Junior High School. In 1972, 1984, he coached at LeGrand's. Then he went to Sam Houston High School. This is in Sam Houston, Louisiana. He coached in 1989 and 1988. Then he came back to LeGrand Senior High School as the head coach. And he coached in 1989 through 2000. And then he ended, he's going to end his career at St. Louis Catholic High School as the head coach in Louisiana, Lake Charles, Louisiana, from 2001 to 2013. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Coach Mike John Bio, my high school coach. As you can see, the coach of the decade. You know, that's a definite honor to be the coach of a decade, and hopefully I can get to that one day. But I got to start coaching for the high school. So. But I appreciate everybody that was listening in to this broadcast. It was such a great time. If you'd like to call me or email me and talk about this. I'd be more than happy to speak to you about it. My name is George Beverly. Next time I see you, hear you, or be around you, you should be sounding off. Have a great day. Bye-bye.